May it please the court, I am Sharon Maddox, counsel for Sunflower Electric Power Corporation. In 1980, the Rural Utilities Service prepared an environmental impact statement and determined to finance the construction of the Holcomb Power Plant. Since that day, all of the lender's interactions with the borrower have been in pursuit of the RUS's statutory responsibility to collect on that original debt. There are at least four reasons why those interactions do not constitute a violation of the National Environmental Policy Act and do not justify the relief that was granted in the court below. First, RUS determined that an applicable regulation...
Are you going to address the jurisdictional issue? It seems to me we have a rather significant hurdle to overcome here, right? Why do we have jurisdiction to hear a remand order?
Your Honor, we believe that we have jurisdiction both under 1291 because we have a final order from the district court.
If I disagree with you on that, what basis?
We believe that the collateral order doctrine should apply in this situation.
Has it ever been applied except for the government? Ever?
Not in this circuit as of yet. However, there is nothing in this circuit's precedent that we believe prohibits that.
Well, the circuit's precedent says the only exception is for the government. That sounds like pretty good precedent.
Well, the cases that are cited in the brief say that it usually applies to government agencies, which we will admit, and it also says that it usually does not apply to private entities. But none of the circuit's precedents, I think, squarely hold.
You got another jurisdictional argument?
We also believe we have jurisdiction under 1292, Your Honor, because there is an injunction in this case.
Well, you think the injunction's improper, right?
I believe that the injunction is improper.
And you think it's improper among other reasons because in administrative law cases, vacatur and remand, or at least remand, is the normal and usual solution, right?
That is the normal solution.
And in Shalala, we said when the district court ignores what is supposed to be the correct solution, we ignore the injunction. And we just regard it as a remand for jurisdictional purposes,
yes,
correct?
Yes, but in Shalala, no one argued 1292 jurisdiction, Your Honor.
Well, regardless, there was an injunction in the case which could have made it final, and nonetheless, the court said we were going to ignore it for those purposes.
The distinction between Shalala and the current case, Your Honor, is that in Shalala there was a remand and there was a specific task that was assigned to the agency in the Shalala remand. They were directed to recalculate and to make certain retroactive payments. In this situation...
Doesn't Shalala teach us that the inquiry in which we are supposed to engage is to look carefully to see if, in fact, the district court is asking the agency to do something beyond what they would have done just with the decision of the case and the remand order, whether there was something plus that was asked? And here, if Judge Sullivan had simply... decided the issue that NEPA was violated and had remanded to the agency, wouldn't the world look the same way it does today? The injunction added nothing.
The injunction does add something, Your Honor.
What does it add?
Well, to begin with, the judge in the district court did not vacate the agency's decision.
Well, that's so good for you, right? You're not complaining about that.
I'm not complaining about that, Your Honor. But he did not, so that in the usual administrative case, where there would be an agency action is found to be improper, that agency action would be vacated.
Well, that's not exactly correct in this court. Sometimes we vacate, and sometimes we just remand.
But there's no way to correct the alleged violation if there's...
You mean you have no way to correct, you think?
I have no way to correct the alleged violation. The agency couldn't collect the alleged violation.
Well, the agency isn't complaining. You're the only one complaining. So what's your problem?
My problem is I am harmed by this order, Your Honor.
In what way?
I am harmed by this order in a number of ways. One, the injunction as worded requires an EIS that be done on future actions taken by RUS with respect to Sunflower that are either directly connected mm-hmm. to the Holcomb expansion process or that are considered to be major federal actions.
Before they can consent, right? Before RUS can consent.
Yes.
Your position is there's nothing left for RUS to consent to, correct?
that is directly related to the Holcomb expansion project, that is true. However, given the fact that this court, when they formulated this injunction, used an improper aggregation of multiple actions under NEPA in violation of this court's precedent under Karst, then what you have is a situation, particularly in light of the or in connection with language in the injunction, that requires this court and requires the agency to essentially view cumulatively all these actions and perform an EIS without discretion.
Your position is there's nothing left. So you can go right ahead and start and let the agency sue you if the agency thinks the consent is required, and then you get your appeal.
We are bound by our loan agreements, Your Honor, to seek approvals for a wide variety of issues that are not directly related to the Holcomb expansion project, but which are rationally considered in connection with, particularly viewed in light of the district court's aggregation, federalization of a number of agency actions to create a major federal action in violation of Karst.
The injunction is not directed at you. It just says RUS shall not issue any approvals or consents for agreements, arrangements directly related to the project, or take any other major federal actions in connection with the expansion project until an EIS is complete. Your position is that there's nothing left for them to do. You can go ahead. Now, if you go ahead and they say, no, we have to consent to that, they can sue you. Or if you think that you have a right to a consent that has nothing to do with the environment, you can sue them if they refuse to give you a consent on a contractual ground, and you'll be back up here. But that's what remands are all about. We wait until we see whether you're really injured or not. Maybe they'll issue an EIS which says everything is great and Sunflower can go ahead. Then you'll have nothing to complain about. Yes, there'll be delay, but that's a consequence of our general rule that says we don't hear remands until the remand's over.
In the record, Your Honor, there is evidence of the very real harm that Sunflower has been experiencing because of the delays, the economic costs. Those are found at the record at Joint Appendix 804 through 817.
But that's true in every case where we hold that when there's a remand, we can't consider the petitioner's claim until the remand is over. The definition of remand, delay. Unfortunately, that's a consequence of our black letter law here.
But this would be an internal delay. There is no mechanism whereby, if we do not have jurisdiction in this court at this time, that we will ever be able to raise these errors.
Why is that? I don't understand.
What would happen on remand, Your Honor, is essentially this. If we go back to the agency, if we go back to RUS, and we say, okay, we're going to have some approval that the agency rationally thinks is in connection with the Holcomb expansion project, and we need that approval. We need that approval for whatever reason. Any appeal, and we do the EIS, then we have already, the EIS is done, we get our approval, we move on. Any appeal of that environmental impact statement or that decision would not address the errors that Sunflower alleges in this case.
Why not?
Well, if the EIS is done and the approvals is granted, well,
then you're done.
We would be dependent upon a third party to raise a challenge to the environmental impact statement.
Well, if you win with the environmental impact statement, then you don't have any problem.
And we've still not gotten any judgment over whether the need for the EIS, the Karst violation,
doesn't matter anymore at that point.
Well, it matters in that we have been denied the review of the legal errors under Karst. We've been denied the review of whether or not we need to spend the time and need to spend the money forever. We are dependent upon any review or even to be able to raise that on a third party, which if you look at the other circuits that have recognized an exception to the collateral order doctrine is really what's going on here. And I also think, Your Honor, that it is really at the basis of the original recognition of the collateral order doctrine, even in this circuit, and the Occidental case, which is you need to interpret the final order doctrine in a practical way that provides for jurisdiction when there is no other opportunity for a remedy. We, I believe, are entitled to an opportunity to challenge whether or not the district court made legal errors in this situation, and a remand simply deprives us of that remedy. It may be a very rare situation.
Well, it's not rare. Your position is that whenever somebody challenges the failure to do an EIS, and this court or the district court says, declares there must be an EIS is required, doesn't enjoin anything, just says the law requires an EIS and remands, that's always immediate interlocutory. There's immediate appeal, right? That would be not just a small exception, but in basically every NEPA case, there will be an exception to our rule of no jurisdiction from a remand.
I don't believe that that's the
Why
case,
not?
Your Honor.
Why
I believe that if in most situations where there is an EIS ordered and you go back, there is an opportunity to challenge the legal basis at a later time. And I think that the Sierra Forest case, which is a Ninth Circuit case and decided in 2011, and it's discussed in our brief, if you look at that case at pages 1175 to 1177, I think the distinction is very clearly drawn. In most situations, the private party will have that relief. In our situation, it is not that case.
Can you tell me why? In most cases will the private party have the ability?
Because in most cases, when the remand goes back, there is something for the agency to do.
Namely, have an EIS.
Or to reevaluate its decision and to impose the conditions that the EIS could use. Here you have an empty remand because you have no vacation. Here, if we don't have to go back, there's nothing for the agency to do ever.
The court's declared the law for future consents. An EIS is required. That's a declaration of the law. You're certainly not better off if they vacate all the past consents.
I believe, Your Honor, that in this situation, particularly if you given the district court's federalization of the Holcomb expansion project by amalgamating the many actions, that where almost any action would trigger this EIS, we would have a situation where whether or not these original actions ever became federal actions, the Karst error would never be subject to review. In many of those other cases, there has been a major federal action that has been identified, and the question is whether or not it had significant impacts. That's not the error that we're talking about here, and I don't believe that we would get review of that case. If you look at Sierra Forest does have a careful discussion of this, where they distinguish this, and I would point out that actually in that situation, the collateral order doctrine was recognized as applying to a private party in a very narrow situation, and that was a situation whereby a supplemental EIS was ordered, but only on a very narrow basis. And the Sierra Club, among other appellants, argued that they were deprived the right to have the review of their other complaints about the supplemental EIS if it went through the supplemental EIS process. The situation is similar here. If we go back and we do an EIS, then we will always be deprived of the right for the review of the Karst, of the question of whether or not there was a major federal action underlying that need for the EIS. And here we have specifically identified a very real error, we believe, in the area of the legal error in the application of the Karst. Moreover, it also forbids us from looking at the issue of whether or not our deference in these particular cases, this is an as-applied challenge, our deference, which should apply to the court's application of the situation exists. And moreover, we believe the case is moot and should be denied on that basis. I'll retain the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
All right. Who's next? Government or Sierra Club?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Amanda Gooden, and I represent the Sierra Club. I have 3 points this morning, and all address the merits of the district court's underlying ruling. I know the court has questions on jurisdiction to hear the appeal, and I would note that we agree with the United States that this court lacks jurisdiction.
Whoa. Now, in your brief, you say there's no jurisdiction under 1291. You say there's no jurisdiction under collateral order. And you do not mention whether there's jurisdiction under 1292 because it's an injunction. What is your position on that?
We believe there is no jurisdiction under 1292 because the order here fleshes out the remand order. And so under this court's precedent, there is no jurisdiction to hear the appeal.
Well, then we ignore the existence of the injunction or we vacate the injunction.
I don't believe that vacature of the injunction is necessary, Your Honor, because...
Why is the injunction necessary in the first place? This is what's bothering me here. So in our cases, we say the normal, maybe always, position is district court's supposed to remand, vacate and remand, but the district court's not supposed to issue an injunction. In Monsanto, the court, taking a different sort of doctrinal approach, says... You have to show all four factors for the injunction, right? So I'm confused here about why you needed this injunction in the first place.
Well, Your Honor, here the district court was trying to craft the narrowest possible remedy.
Right, that's a reason not to give the vacatur, right? Mm-hmm. But your position, my understanding is that RUS agrees with you on the merits. Is that right?
They have chosen not to appeal, Your Honor, yes.
Well, in the district court's opinion, it says that both the plaintiff and the federal, it appears to sound like both the federal plaintiff and the federal, I'm looking at JA 9 and 30, it says, in the instant case, the court has persuaded that injunctive relief requiring RUS to perform an EIS before any future approvals, coupled with the federal defendant's own emphatic conclusion that Sunflower must seek additional approvals from RUS.
Yes, they do agree with us as to the remedy, Your Honor.
I see. They do.
They do.
Right. So they agree that Sunflower has to seek approvals, and they agree that they have to give an EIS before they do that. Mm-hmm. Then why enjoin them?
Well, Your Honor, both we and the federal government took the position that since Sunflower was arguing that no further approvals were necessary, it would help to clarify what needed to happen going forward.
That's the purpose of declaratory relief. Normally, in an administrative law case, the court says, this is the law, and we remand for further proceedings consistent with this opinion. Why isn't that enough here?
We believe the injunction does also help to clarify that the next approval is one that does require environmental review in this case going forward. At least the next approval that directly relates to...
Does RUS agree with that?
They do agree that under the terms of the court's order, the next approval...
Just because the court ordered them to do it, or do they agree that in light of the... I'm not talking about the remedial order, the first order. They agree that they have to do it. I'm going to ask them, so you don't have to stand. But my bottom line here is... you're opening up a big challenge to the merits here, which you don't need to open up if there's no need for this injunction here, because then we plainly do not have any jurisdiction. The only argument for jurisdiction here is the one you've, I'm going to say this diplomatically, avoided in your brief. So, because the other argument is foreclosed, I think, by our case law. So the question is whether we want a very large discussion of when injunctions are permitted in NEPA cases and when they're required, or we just want to say that given the RUS's position in this case, we don't have to address that question because it's everybody on the side that's receiving the injunction. It says it's not needed. We're going to do whatever the judge says is the right thing anyway. You see what I'm asking you?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. I don't know that we would say that the injunction is entirely unnecessary because we don't precisely know what the next approval will be. We know what the next approval should be, and that's the approval for the 2009 settlement agreement that the government agrees required approval before Sunflower entered into it, and they did not get that approval before entering into this agreement that dramatically changed the project's configuration and dramatically changed the amount of debt the United States would recover. So we believe that Sunflower now needs to come back and get that approval. That is the next approval, and certainly that would require an environmental analysis before that was granted. Sunflower is taking a different position, And in the event that they do not come ask for that approval, we think that the district court's order clarifies that the next approval, whatever else that may be, does require environmental review.
So in your brief, although you don't cite 1292, you adopt the government's brief. And its argument is that for purposes of determining whether the court's order is immediately appealable, the entry of a specific remedy like an injunction does not change the order's overall character as a remand, citing County of Los Angeles.
Well, we do believe that here, where the order is a remand to the agency to prepare an environmental review before giving the next approval, just as the chief judge was saying, if at the end of that process Sunflower gets their approval, we don't need to come back here. They have what they were looking for. If they do not get their approval, they will have the opportunity to challenge that environmental impact statement.
So you asked for an injunction against Sunflower, and the district court denied that.
Correct.
The government came in with some other suggestions, and the district court adopted much of what the government was suggesting.
Yes, those were suggestions that both we and the government agreed on.
And you joined the government?
Yes, we requested very similar relief.
Okay. So you were asking not only for an injunction against Sunflower, but also against the government?
We requested that the court order Sunflower to come back and seek approval for that major 2009 change.
Right, and the judge denied that request.
The judge denied that. We also asked the judge to order the government to prepare an environmental impact statement,
right,
and the government joined us in that request, but the judge did not order the immediate preparation of an environmental impact statement.
Right, so he denied all of your requests is what I'm getting at.
Yes, we did also request that the declaratory relief and
I'm in the injunction area here, just so we're clear. I will ask the government, because I'm not sure what they are telling us to do. You say an injunction is necessary.
We believe it is, yes.
All right. So then we have jurisdiction.
Well, we believe that since the injunction fleshes out the terms of the remand, and since Sunflower will have the opportunity to appeal the ultimate decision here, we still believe that an appeal now is not appropriate.
Well, what do you do with 1292? if there's an injunction, we have jurisdiction. That's under our statutory. 1292 is pretty simple. So I'm really surprised that you're here arguing. Maybe I just misunderstood. That you're arguing we have jurisdiction. So if we have jurisdiction, let's
I believe
go to a whole different set of arguments. I guess
we need to flesh out the terms of a remand, then it is not immediately appealable.
Well, it's not what?
But based on what authority?
I believe the some of the cases that this court was recently citing, that a remand, an order that is characterized as a remand and that has the effect of a remand without a much independent force for the injunction.
Yeah, that's the key. So it's the without much independent force. That's the key. So if there's an injunction that we should basically ignore because district court's really not normally entitled to do that except in an extraordinary case, then we would treat it as not an injunction, just a remand. Now, are you telling us that this is just an ordinary old remand, or are you telling that this is really extraordinary? And an injunction is really absolutely necessary in this case. You're caught. You're going to have to choose between the two piles here.
Your Honor, we believe that the injunction is necessary, and that would mean that this court would have jurisdiction over the appeal.
And it's necessary in the sense that Monsanto said we don't presume that in every NEPA case an injunction is required, because that puts the test upside down, but rather it meets every one of the four requirements and is in some ways an unusual case. You think that RUS is such a bad actor in this case, listen closely over there, that an injunction is necessary to require that agency to comply with the law.
Your Honor, in Monsanto, I believe the Supreme Court directed lower courts to craft the narrowest possible remedy. And under the unique facts of this case, we believe that the injunction ordering prospective relief is actually a narrower remedy than the remedy of vacature here. So we do believe that some relief is necessary to ensure that these NEPA violations are, in fact, remedied going forward. But I think under these facts, it actually would have been a more drastic remedy. I'd order vacature. Now, if this
in other words, are you suggesting to us that while you could have told the district court, we will presume that the agency will comply with the law, do the EIS before it gives any further approvals, but we're in court, and rather than undergo the expense of bringing a new suit if the agency doesn't do that as we think it should, we want the protection of the injunction here?
Your Honor, the problem isn't that we believe the agency will fail to obey the law. The problem here is Sunflower. We believe that...
But if Sunflower is only limited to the extent agency approval is required, that's all the district court gave you.
We believe agency approval is required, but if they don't come back to request that required approval, they have said that they aren't going to, they don't think that they need to.
Right.
We believe that they're wrong about that, and we are harmed by the lack of NEPA compliance in this case.
How does the injunction help you since it's not directed at Sunflower if they don't come back?
We did ask the district court to go further, but we do believe that it makes clear that whatever the next approval is, environmental review is required of that approval.
Right, but it doesn't. Nothing in the injunction makes them come back, right?
No, that's true. It does not make them come back. We did ask the district court for that, but the district court did not grant that part of our request.
In lieu of the 2009 settlement, how could they not come back?
They have to, Your Honor. That's our position. That is the government's position.
But why do you need an injunction?
Because they are saying they're not going to. And if they don't come back, the government has a mechanism to force them back to the table. There are very strong provisions for breach in the contractual agreements here.
But again, why do you need an injunction?
We can't exercise those. My client.
Well, the injunction doesn't require the government to force them to come back. It just says that the government can't consent. So this goes back to the question I asked opposing counsel.
If
they don't come back, the government can sue them for breach. For contractual breach, and then we'll be here eventually if that should happen.
The government could sue them for breach. We could not. And while
if they don't come back, you still can't sue them, can you? What can you sue them for?
No, we can't. But the injunction does force them to come back. So if they don't come back for 2009, which we think they have to do and the government thinks they have to do, they are going to have to come back for other things. And the injunction makes clear that whatever they come back for next, they have to prepare environmental analysis.
That's what the district judge's declaration of the law requires also. So why is there an injunction required here?
Well, if they came back for something and said, well, we think we're coming back for something that wouldn't independently require environmental analysis, the injunction makes clear that because we have these past violations, we do need environmental analysis.
Doesn't the opinion make that clear also?
The opinion makes clear that there were past violations, yes, but I believe the order makes sure that those violations will be remedied by telling them they have to prepare environmental review before the next thing, whatever that
is. The order without the injunction at the end do the same thing?
I think the injunction goes further than the order because I think that it makes clear that even if the next approval is not one that would independently trigger NEPA, the next approval is one that's going to require environmental review because we have these past violations. Your Honor, I would like to briefly address Sunflower's arguments that somehow there was an aggregation of minor approvals here or that there was, I think they referred to it as a karst violation. We have two major federal actions at issue in this case. Those are the 2002 and the 2007 agreements between the Rural Utilities Service and Sunflower Electric. Those are the two times that the agency took major federal action and should have complied with NEPA but didn't. Both of those transactions constituted legally required approvals. Both included financial assistance to Sunflower for the purpose of building this new coal plant. And both of those two times triggered NEPA. There's no problem under KARST here because we do have agency action, agency control going forward, and we have two specific final agency actions. I see that I'm out of time. If there are no further questions, we ask that all aspects of the district court's ruling be affirmed.
Thank you. We'll hear from the government.
May it please the court, Brian Toth from the United States Department of Justice, representing Department of Agriculture Rural Utilities Service. For more than 20 years, this court has consistently held that orders from district courts sending matters back to administrative agencies other than solely ministerial proceedings are not final in the meaning of 1291. Has also consistently rejected the application of the collateral order exception as to private parties, including interveners such as Sunflower. And finally, this court has consistently treated injunctive orders or other remedial orders that were entered superfluously along with remand orders as if they were functionally remands.
This one's superfluous?
We believe it is. We don't believe it's necessary. Looking in hindsight, we acknowledge we did request injunctive relief here. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, looking at the record, it's difficult to discern what additionally this would offer. We thought that the district court might order, and we requested the district court to order Sunflower to return to RUS. And that would have accomplished resolving that dispute that the parties still have to this day and that is causing a lot of confusion. And
I understand why this looked different in the district court. I get that part. I guess what I'm asking is the district court ordered that RUS shall not issue any approvals or consents for agreements or arrangements directly related to the Holcomb expansion project or take any other major federal actions in connection with the Holcomb expansion project until an EIS is complete, right?
Correct.
You intend to do that regardless of whether you're enjoined. Is that correct? You believe that's the consequence of the judge's ruling on the law.
That's right? Correct. And the United States has acquiesced in the judgment through the process that you all are familiar with.
So then there is nothing left for an injunction to do unless we were to presume, which nobody here is presuming, that the government will violate what it understands to be the law, correct?
Right.
What about the plaintiff's argument here? Plaintiffs came into court and they want the protection of not having to refile a suit, as I understand it, if for some reason the agency doesn't do what it's supposed to do.
Well, even if they had the injunction, the more appropriate course for them would be to bring a new complaint to enforce the injunction rather than seek to hold the government in contempt.
What I'm trying to understand here is that the district court issues a statement of the law saying the agency must do something. And then necessarily the nature of the remand here involves a process. It's going to take some time. And Sunflower wants to proceed. And so I assume, not casting any aspersions here, but they will push the envelope as far as it will push the envelope as far as it can on that matter, while this EIS is being performed. And the agency may not be as vigilant as the plaintiff would like on that matter. So the plaintiff wants the protection of the injunction. I mean, counsel was pressed on this pretty hard, but was quite adamant,
right,
that they wanted the protection of the injunction, that they see some added value, that the government agencies don't always do what they're supposed to do.
No, I understand that. I mean, in the usual posture in administrative law cases, a remand is sufficient to get the agency to comply with the law, and even where for example, in Northern Air Cargo, the case mm-hmm. we said in our brief, there was an injunction entered accompanying a remand by the same district judge, and the decision there noted that entry of the injunction caused a lot of confusion because the parties went back and attempted, instead of bringing a second lawsuit after the remand, they attempted to seek to hold the agency in contempt. And that results in a confusion about the proper standard of review to apply.
Well, the district court judge was trying to protect himself by asking for additional briefing on this issue.
Right, and there was quite a bit of briefing that was put in there. You know, I would just bring the court back to the prior cases like Northern Air Cargo and County Los Angeles and a third whose name is escaping me, the North Carolina Fisheries Association case, where detailed remedial orders, detailed instructions have been entered along with a remand order, and this court has functionally treated them for purposes of 1291, at least, as if they're remands. And granted, this court has not addressed 1292 expressly, but it has said in the Pueblo of Sandia case that categorically these types of remands are not, they're of a class that that are not appealable.
So if this court takes that position here, namely accepting the government's argument that the injunction was functionally unnecessary, does that mean that the plaintiff loses the protection of the injunction?
No, I mean, if this court decides that it doesn't have appellate jurisdiction, it to my understanding, it doesn't have power to vacate the injunction. It would just simply dismiss the appeal for lack of appellate jurisdiction.
So just in my hypothetical, if we were to adopt your position on jurisdiction, the case goes back to the agency. Years pass as this EIS is rumbling along, and Sunflower decides, you know, it's time for us to move ahead, and they start moving. And for whatever reason, the agency decides not to call them on it. Is there any teeth left to the injunction? That's what I'm just not clear on here. They got an injunction. The government supported it in the district court. Counsel has told us that they think it's important here, but they have, on the other hand, also adopted your brief on 1292.
So I think that the posture here, I mean, you're being asked to determine your own jurisdiction, and if you determine that there's no appellate jurisdiction, I do think the appeal is simply dismissed, and the injunction remains in place, even if this court issues an opinion saying that functionally it was unnecessary and is the same as a remand and whatever else. I don't know that as a technical matter that this court would actually have power to vacate that injunction.
Let me ask you a question about, I'm still a little confused about the effect of the 2009 settlement on this question of whether the injunction is now adding anything to what the remand order provided. Is it under the 2009 settlement agreement, if Sunflower comes to RUS seeking approval or consent for some action, is there a chance that that might not be a major federal action?
I believe so. I mean, they've...
But then you do need the injunction, right?
Well, you're saying something related to the Holcomb expansion
project. Right.
Well, I mean, we've acquiesced in the judgment here, and there were a collection of actions that were challenged that we didn't think were major federal actions that the district court said they were, so...
Yeah, but after the 2009 settlement agreement, let's say next year, Sunflower comes seeking approval for something related to the extension project. Is there a possibility that's something that there that approval, if you granted it, that it would not be a major federal action?
I think that, you know, if the agency were to make that call, I think there would be a considerable litigation risk given the district court's remand order. And what I was trying to get at before
What do you mean by that?
I think the district court had before it a host of actions that RUS had taken over the years that we thought were relatively minor. And we lost on that argument, and the district court said they're all major federal action, or in the aggregate, however you have to look at it. And given the district court's ruling, I think the agency would be reluctant to conclude that
anything is not.
That approvals necessary for this project are in the future going forward are not major federal action requiring an EIS. That said, the alleged injury that my opposing counsel is referring to in the declarations pertains to reimbursement requests that they've submitted and that RUS has denied from an account for the development of Holcomb. And those, Sunflower says in its brief, are not necessary for the project to go forward, so they're not those approvals requiring an EIS. But the declaration was submitted well before the remand order here. And it talks about decisions that RUS was making to deny those requests on its own voluntarily, even before the district court's order was issued. if they're upset about those, their remedy is, for example, in a suit in the Court of Federal Claims for reimbursement under the contracts, not from further appeal in this court. And one, just one more thing. I'm approaching out of time, but I just wanted to add one more thing on our citation to Steel Company in our brief. We cited it in the standard of review, but it's also useful, and we didn't highlight this, but it also has some useful language about the order of deciding the reviewing court's jurisdiction before deciding the jurisdiction of the court from which the record came, which is relevant here in so far as we are being asked both to decide appellate jurisdiction and the jurisdiction of the district court.
By that, you mean the mootness question, or what do you mean?
The mootness question, yes. So unless the court has any other questions.
Okay, thank you. How much time is left for the petitioner? All right, we'll give you 2 minutes, double your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. In this case, the injunction is real, and this court does have jurisdiction under 1292. I believe that when you listen to counsel for the Sierra Club's statement that in this situation, the next approval, even if it would not independently require an EIS, because of the collective view that the court took of multiple federal actions, clearly shows that this does something more than a simple remand and that this court should have jurisdiction.
But does it do anything more than a simple declaration of the law, which is not appealable at this point?
Your Honor, we did say that if there was a, that if the merits of this case were to be upheld, which we do not think that they are appropriate, that a remand would have been the appropriate remedy for this court. And I would agree with you that although we, if you cannot apply the collateral order doctrine, which we believe there is room in this court's precedents for you to do, but if you're not going to do that, then there would not be jurisdiction and the remand would be proper. But as long as that injunction is there, and as long as it has real effect, then I believe that this court does have jurisdiction to consider the issue and to consider the merits of this issue. And it is very clear, as the court, as the DOJ said, that this court took a series of small actions, approval of a notice of a letter of intent to negotiate was one of the 6 actions that were specified by the Sierra Club. And it's very clear that the court aggregated those actions. The court's opinion said this in numerous places. You can find it in the opinion at 33 and 34, at 26, at 28, and at 110 and 111, where the court did not ever identify a major federal action, but instead collectively joined all these things. And now we have an injunction that even if the next approval that we need to go into, maybe it's something minor, maybe we're going to change our president, and that requires approval under our loan agreements, they're validly exempted from NEPA under a regulation that was not at issue in this case. This was an as-applied challenge. It would trigger NEPA. We would have real harm from that injunction, and we'd never be able to have a review of the underlying NEPA violation of the collective nature of the actions that
you would just have it later, right? Imagine they did what you said. You changed your president. They said, well, you can't do that without an EIS. You have 2 choices. One, you could claim a contractual breach, or 2, the EIS could go forward and you could win, in which case it would be delayed, but that's all. Or the EIS could go forward and you would lose. Then you would appeal from a true final agency action and you would have preserved all of your arguments about the federalization of the requirements. And at that point, you would be able to bring the claim that you can't conglomerate all these small decisions into ones. So your ability to appeal would be delayed, but it wouldn't be foreclosed.
Your Honor, I don't believe that's the case. And the reason is that the EIS that would be done would either be adequate or inadequate, and that would be what would be evaluated in the next.
Well, that's not right. You would be able to say on appeal that the district court's original decision requiring an EIS was wrong, and whether it's adequate or not adequate, it's irrelevant because you think there was no requirement of an EIS in the first place.
But if the EIS is done, Your Honor, an agency can always do more NEPA than is required. There's no error in an agency doing a NEPA analysis that isn't necessary.
Yeah, and there's no harm to you other than delay if they do the EIS, as long as they consent at the end. If at the end of the EIS they conclude they're not going to consent, then you can appeal this point. Isn't that right?
I don't think we get review of the underlying error of the aggregation of all of these major federal actions.
If we thought you did get review, would that eliminate that problem?
I hope you're on the panel, Your Honor.
Well, this panel will be the one to say it, so. Okay, I will take the matter under consideration. Thank you very much.